Welcome to Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, we're back with another edition of Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags, Chuck Curry on WoWoW 1190 and 107.5 FM. And of course, wherever you download podcasts, if you have downloaded this podcast, make sure you rate and review us and share us with all your friends. Well, as Chuck and I record this weekend, it is the weekend, the 19th anniversary of 9/11, if you can believe it. 19 years ago, our world changed. And I would say, Chuck, we were more unified on September 12th than we ever were, and we couldn't be farther from that moment. If we want to get political for a second, it's unbelievable.
I will for a second. Let me just state, when George Bush held up that megaphone next to that firefighter on at the Ground Zero.
Yep.
That was the last moment that I really felt serious patriotism in this country.
I totally agree. That was the last moment of no red, no light, no left, no right, no red, no blue.
We could come together back then.
Yeah.
I don't think we can anymore.
Well, you got to remember, too, there was no, very little, tiny social media at the time.
True.
And the explosion of the internet had not happened, which we'll get to one of the movies I got a chance to see this week. I want to talk about in a second.
Okay.
But we've got a lot to do. Let me, we'll talk. We're going to go back 19 years and talk about the movies that were in theaters on September 11th and the movies that were affected by September 11th, and then some of the movies about September 11th that you and I are both fans of. There are a couple out there that are definitely must watches, and some you probably are too hard to watch at times. So we're going to travel back to 9/11 in just a little bit. We'll do some Fast Five. We've got some very big movie news, including some delays on some big movies coming out, and some trailers that have hit the scene that Chuck and I might want to talk about. So lots to do, Chuck. But let's start with this movie I got a chance to watch on Netflix a couple nights ago. It debuted. It's called The Social Dilemma. It's a documentary that actually is intertwined with real actors playing parts as well. But it is about the effect of what social media has had on this country over the last 10 years and the road we are potentially heading. I think it's one of the more important documentary films that our society should watch in quite some time, Chuck. I was really both appalled. It's almost like you're watching a nightmare, but it's actual reality on just the manipulation of there is no real news anymore because the news that gets filtered to you, Chuck, is made just for you on the internet. And there's no way you could ever find out what the middle is or even the other side is sometimes because it's just the algorithms that these guys have produced. Now, they didn't get into the Facebook Twitter business maliciously, but somehow, Chuck, it's all been about the money and separating this country. And this movie really reveals what we might be heading towards. And I don't see any relief in sight. And this movie doesn't really end with too much hope, although there are solutions at the end on how they feel things could change. Watch The Social Dilemma. It's very important, especially in the times that we're in right now, Chuck. It's a great documentary. Netflix usually comes through once or twice a year with unbelievable documentaries, and this is definitely one of them. It's called.
What's the running time?
It's about an hour and a half. It's lean and mean. It really the amazing thing is you watch it and you're learning things that you already know is true. You know, and there's just nothing we can do about it at this point as a society.
I can't wait to watch it. Actually, I think it's a fascinating subject. It's an important one. And it's absolutely
and it needs to be watched before November 4th.
Let's be honest, I haven't seen it, but it's obviously it's accurate because it's probably the biggest obstacle in our pathway to normalcy again.
Yeah. To civility in this world.
Absolutely.
Really. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's on Netflix now, and you know we both have young daughters. And the path that they're heading down, it really makes you scary. Now, they do say sometimes it skips generations. The one generation will rebel about what the, you know, the first generation did. So there could be hope for our kids that they're not going to get sucked in by social media and all that stuff. But I don't know, Chuck, it's hard to believe that we can, people just,
no, I gotta just say this. You know, I employ a lot of young people in the businesses I'm in. I'm in the restaurant industry. I own a few ice cream parlors and a smoothie shop. And I got to tell you, the one constant message that I hear from young people is, I cannot believe I'm living through this COVID nightmare. No matter what you believe in it, the extent of it, how actual serious the virus is or not, whatever your viewpoint might be, there certainly is a mass depression and frustration that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
Not this long.
No, never. Right. Right. Exactly. There is hope. I did see another movie on Apple Plus, actually Prime Video. I know, Chuck, is all the, I haven't gone to the theaters again since Tenet, but,
I saw Tenet, so I want to talk about that too.
I know you do, but, I saw Chemical Hearts, which stars Lily Reinhart and Austin Abrams, about teenagers. Great little romantic teenager movie that's on Prime Video. Two very appealing leads. Now, Lily Reinhart, she's on Riverdale. And Austin Abrams, I haven't seen too much of, but I know he has a role. He plays Ron on The Living Dead. I know that. He did. I don't know how long that character's been on. But very good young actors falling in love on screen. I want to recommend that film. For Prime Video members, go check it out. It's got heart, it's got laughs, and, you know, in a time we probably need that more than ever, I want to recommend that.
You know,
movie.
I remember when we first started this program a few years ago, I used to say, I saw this at a movie theater.
Yeah.
Well, what happened, Mike?
Well, we used to start every show
what's going on here?
I know. We used to say, what's the last thing you saw in the theater? And every once in a while we'd bring up a Netflix movie that we all happened to come across.
Right. Well, we watch something on DVD or Blu-ray. Now it's Prime, it's Hulu, it's Space. Like, I don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Chuck, I don't even remember the last time I put a Blu-ray into a machine to watch a movie.
I that's going to go by the wayside. Listen, the only thing keeping the Blu-ray market alive is a lot of the extras in the Steelbook series. And there's some good stuff still. But having said that, you have to wonder if studios are going to stop putting their product on Blu-ray eventually.
Yep, I would think so. All right, last week I talked about Tenet and gave it a moderate thumbs up. I you know, visually it's unbelievable. I had a lot of problems with it. But Chuck actually went back and got a chance to see the movie as well. And he had a reaction to it that was zero.
Let me just say this. I'm glad I went to the movies to watch it. I hope people go and see it. I want it to make money because the industry needs it. Let's be honest. We're going to discuss some of the release dates changing in a few seconds, but Tenet, in my opinion, is taking one for the team, for the industry.
Yep.
I think the other studios are going to follow a different trajectory going forward. As a film, I got to be honest, Mike, I didn't like it very much. I was disappointed. I thought it was interesting. It had some interesting stuff in it. Some of the visuals were interesting, but I was not overly involved. I thought the juice of the film was Kenneth Branagh was the villain in the movie.
You guessed the villain.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he's sort of an interesting type villain. He's sort of an abusive husband who has this ability to reverse and change time, whatever you want to call it. Here's the deal. I've never been a fan of going to a movie needing to read footnotes when it's over, saying, I just don't understand what the heck was going on. And I've got to be honest with you. People who make the argument that Chris Nolan is smarter than everybody and that the audience needs to smarten up, and maybe you should watch this 3 or 4 times to get it. Ridiculous. I'm sorry. I don't buy that argument. That's not why I go to the movies. I don't mind thought-provoking stuff or if I have to watch something maybe a second time to sort of solidify an understanding of it. But I think I could watch this 5 times, and it is what it is. It's confusing. It's not overly involving. Yeah, it has some visually interesting stuff in it.
The two leads are good, though. The stars are good.
Listen, they are fine. Like, John David Washington is fine. Robert Pattinson. I guess he's fine. But they're playing characters that you never really care about overly. You don't really get into. I am really perplexed, and I just want to say, Chris Nolan did three great Batman movies, in my opinion, right? I mean, might be the best Batman there's ever been or ever will be on screen. They had story. They had character. You cared about it. I mean, Batman Begins, there's so much emotion in that film.
Mm-hmm.
The Alfred, you know, why do we fall down to get back up?
Mm-hmm.
You could argue he's made the definitive comic book movie with most of the Dark Knight. I thought his Dark Knight Rises is a fascinating film, flawed as it is. But they all had story. They all were involving. I knew what the heck was going on from beginning to end. Everything else he makes, he's so fascinated with this time and travel. He likes confusing his audience.
Well,
it's
yeah.
such a fault. I mean, listen, Mike.
But in his defense, you were critical.
I went with five people, and I polled about 15 people who watched it so far. 14 didn't like it. They just like, I don't get it. It's,
right.
it's pointless. It's confusing. You can't have 14 to 1 with that reaction and think you got a good movie. I understand some of these highbrow internet people, you know, giving it a rave because it's so complex. I mean, come on.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. But I will say this. He did dumb it down for Dunkirk, and you were critical of that movie.
Because it's hollow. Dunkirk is like you walk into a movie theater, right? And it's like, okay, like you're in the midst of an aerial battle, and I still don't get character development. I don't know who these people are. I'm not really involved.
I'm watching it at a distance.
It's not really – listen, some people could dig that, and I'm fine with that. It's not for me. I want to be enveloped in character.
Now look,
and I want a payoff. I want to know what the hell. I want to know the reason I was in a movie theater for 2.5 hours.
Hey,
I want to know.
I know. Memento, right. Insomnia, The Prestige.
I like Insomnia. I like those movies.
They're all great movies.
Inception to me is confusing.
It is,
but it's better than this.
It is,
and Dunkirk is hollow.
And Interstellar loses.
Interstellar it loses its way in the last act. Having said that, that was more involving though.
Well, I will agree.
But more involving.
Yeah, it was. I will agree. It's more involving because there is character development, maybe too much so in Interstellar.
I guess there comes a point where you say to yourself, yeah, I respect the heck out of Chris Nolan. And always made some really – I mean, always made three great Batman movies. But I got to call him out and say, hey, Chris, like, tell a coherent story, please.
Yeah.
Like, you're selling – this is a $200 million movie for Warner Brothers, right? You can't tell me that – you cannot tell me – that the bean counters in the studio watching the first cut of this film said, boy, we're going to make a fortune off this movie.
No.
Well,
their head hurts. I know their head hurt because it's just too
much. And it's the loudest damn movie I've ever. It's so loud. It's just so loud.
You're lucky you didn't see it in IMAX. That's all I'm telling you. All right, Chuck, let's get to some movie news. And I mean, there's no bigger movie news than another release date getting pushed back. And it looks like Wonder Woman's going to get delayed 2 months after a big release of the new trailer coming in November. It's a big deal. You know,
tell me why. You tell me why this is. I'll tell you why it's happening. Because Tenet, which is on about 1,880 screens.
Made $20 million over
Labor
Day.
Made $20 million. Now, via what we're dealing with in the culture with COVID, the studio is going to take that number. It's by far the best number, right, since the pandemic. I mean, the biggest number before that was $4 million with Unhinged. You got to take it. Having said that, $200 million, you got to do at least 2.5 times the budget worldwide to recoup your money. So they need about $500 million. It's done 160 worldwide so far. There's no competition in sight. Having said that, I'm telling you, Mike, it's going to fall 50% week to week. It's still going to do it.
Yeah.
Even with nothing out there. It's going to fall 50%, at least 40.
So they're saying Christmas Day now for Wonder Woman 84.
And then Candyman gets pushed to next year.
And now, you know, they did just release a huge theatrical trailer, the new one for James Bond. And they're promising that for Thanksgiving.
I'm involved and got the poster. We got the poster in the mail. That's always a good sign. I'm going to say Wonder Woman ain't going to happen. Bond, maybe, but probably not. But so not definitely not.
You thinking Wonder Woman, maybe late spring, summer release then next
summer.
Year. Summer. Yeah. Well,
listen, think about it. You make a $200 million one. Say Wonder Woman's a $180 million superhero movie for Warner Brothers, a sequel. They expect $1 billion worldwide. Mike, that's a billion. If you know COVID, clear sailing, that's a $1 billion movie,
yeah.
Right? Meaning Warner Brothers is going to pocket at least $300 million after marketing.
Yeah,
they're not going to release it to lose money. This is why Tenet did what it did. Tenet took one for the team.
To see, Warner to Brothers test said, the market. It was a,
they had
it was,
to. It was, somebody it was a had test. To. So listen, yeah. somebody had to do it. Because yeah. if nobody does it, you'll one,
know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
And two, not everybody's going to sit on $200 million investments for a year. They're going to – what Disney did with Mulan, all streaming, international release. But some of these studios, they want some of their money back. They're just not going to sit – they're not just going to sit on the property. If you're Bond or you're Wonder Woman, I sit on that to next summer. I'm just talking.
But how long do these movies have shelf lives, though? That's the only thing.
I think
thing,
they do. I think Wonder Woman and Bond have they're fine till next summer.
The brand's big enough.
Yeah. Having said that, listen, we got it. This got to be over by next summer at least an 80-90% extent. When COVID's not going to go away completely, it's not even with a vaccine. There'll be a vaccine. It's not going to go away completely. There's still going to be people say, oh, well, you know, I still have a slight potential to get COVID, even with a vaccine. But the psychology really has to dramatically change to get people. Somebody said to me, to get people back in the movie theater, somebody texted me tonight and they said to me, it doesn't really matter because my buddy was sitting in a multiplex watching Raiders of the Lost Ark, yeah. right, Revival. And I said, we both know Revival classics are not going to get people back in their multiplexes. They're not.
No.
And he said
no.
to me in a text back, nothing will right now. And I said to myself, yeah, he's right. Not on a mass scale. If you release Wonder Woman 1984 this weekend, you're not going to get packed movie theaters. Though people want to see the heck out of a movie, there's still more than enough fear. The psychology is way out of whack. It's not happening right now. And it sucks, but it's the truth.
And it's sad. It really is sad. There's no doubt about it. Well, there are still releases they're talking about, Chuck, all the time.
I know.
And another one is, Borat 2, Sacha Baron Cohen. He's completed filming that movie. It sounds like Zachary Levi says Shazam 2 is going to start filming in early 2021. So productions have begun. And Thor, another Thor movie is in the works. Not just one, but Chris Hemsworth says probably another one after that. Thor Love and Thunder is the one he's completing now.
With Natalie Portman, right?
Yep. And he's
female Thor. Yeah, that should be an interesting project. And, I just read, today, Nev Campbell's going to come back as Sidney Prescott in Scream 5, joining Courtney Cox. And David Arquette coming back in the Scream 5.
Well, yeah, that's a, and I
that's
actually
a, that's a 2022 release.
I don't even know where we'll be in 2022. I got word of a She's All That remake, Chuck. I didn't realize that teenage comedy from about 20 years ago was begging for a remake.
No, I didn't know that either. I didn't know that. I got to tell you,
it's a good movie though. It is watchable.
I'm doing the financials a little bit in my head because I'm involved, as we know, as I talk about all the time, in a small independent nonprofit theater. And even if we shut down completely, and that's not a good model, that's not a good strategy for a small theater to be completely closed, because out of mind, out of sight, you're forgotten, right?
Yep.
In the state we're running now, we'll burn through $100,000 within a year. That's a small 3-screen theater.
Yeah.
At the rate we're going, we'll burn through $100,000. Think of a multiplex. Holy smoke. You're talking millions of dollars, Mike.
Crazy.
They're going to burn through a multiplex is going to burn through 2 or 3 million in a year.
I don't know how they can keep the lights on, to be honest.
They're gonna.
With
people not showing up in 25% capacity and you're not even doing that, and there's no movies to be shown. I hate to be negative. I got to be honest with you. I don't want to say I'm depressed doing this every week because I like you. You're a decent guy, okay?
Well, that's nice of you. Thank you.
Having said that, it seems like we're pounding the same drum and we're playing the same harp, no?
Yeah, right? I know. Well, nothing even comes out this week.
Can we do a sports show next week? What's up?
I don't know. Sports is kind of depressing sometimes too. Yeah. Antebellum comes out on VOD in 2 weeks, but even that's VOD, Chuck. That's not even going to get a big time release. Maybe the savior. There is one person who can save us all, Chuck.
Who?
And that's our good buddy, the one that always comes through for us. That's Gerard Butler. Greenland is promising.
I like the trailer.
Theatrical release at the end of September. Maybe Gerard Butler.
I think those type of movies are going to be released because they're not going to spend a ton of money on marketing. The budget is what it is. It's not a $200 million movie. I don't know, maybe $75 million. They'll kick it into some theaters. They'll kick it back to streaming real quick. You got to release something for these theaters. My God, what are you going to do? They can't play Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's just not going to work.
I know. Well,
classic movies, the way they really work on a big screen, you have to have an introduction. You have to have fanfare. Yep. Yep. That stuff is, I've done so many of them. That stuff is awesome. You go to a mall and there's three people watching Raiders. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't really leave an imprint. The only other thing is maybe bringing your daughter to see it on the big screen for the first time. Like Jurassic Park, my daughter's a big fan, never seen it in a movie theater. I can see the appeal for that, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Hey, let me ask you a question. I don't remember. I'm getting older. My memory's going here, okay?
Yeah.
Godfather 3, director's cut. We talked about that last week or no?
We talked about it. We talked about Godfather 3, but I don't think we talked about the. Yeah, we did talk about the director's cut. We did.
All right.
Yeah, because we joked. We joked that he was going to cut his daughter out of the movie.
Oh yeah, we did. I find this story interesting. The fact that they're going to release a. Here's what I find interesting that I didn't realize that Francis Ford Coppola, who had so much influence and made two of the greatest movies of all time, easily hands down Godfather 1 and 2, right? Does Godfather 3 in 1990, and he doesn't have creative control of the ending?
Yeah, that's...
Paramount did?
That's crazy.
Seriously? That makes no sense to me.
It doesn't. Although he did make Jack, too.
Having said that, listen, when he recut... he does some really interesting stuff, and I respect like when he recuts Godfather 1 and 2 into one long film in chronological order. I find that stuff fascinating. He knows what he's doing. I am interested to see his cut of Godfather 3 with a new ending.
I am too.
I can't
deny that. There's no doubt about it. As far as other movie news, Chuck, you got anything else out there? I did see I showed you a couple of the trailer of Vince Vaughn's new movie from the director of Happy Death Day.
I just watched that. It feels like Happy Death Day.
It does. It feels a lot like it.
It has that same exact feel and tone.
Well, you know what it does? It uses...
In story direction. Very much so.
And it uses an old plot device in a new way, which is switching bodies. So
yeah. Oh, that's new?
Vince Vaughn switches body with a teenage girl.
Oh, that's new.
Yeah, it's like Freaky Friday.
I didn't know that.
Well, the movie's actually... The movie's actually called Freaky, a little homage.
Yeah, I think
Friday.
It was always it was big, and then it was Freaky Friday.
Vice versa.
Vice versa.
Like Father, Like Son.
Like Father, Like Son, which was the worst one. That was Dudley Moore and Kirk Cameron, for people who don't know.
We actually
vice
did
versa, I sort of like, though.
We actually did a whole podcast.
Yeah, we did. I got one.
But I will say this. It's interesting to have – I mean, Vince Vaughn's had – we almost did a show on Vince Vaughn.
I like Vince Vaughn a lot.
I do, and it's interesting to have him in this type of movie where he's all in, it looks like.
He's all in. You could tell he's all in on the trailer.
So,
listen, it's a Blumhouse.
Yep.
He showed up. I like him a lot. I mean, you know, the trailer was interesting. It's something new, but it's, at least it's in the horror genre, so it has that same – listen, you can't tell me Happy Death Day is a horror movie.
Well, the first one, especially the second one. The second one's like Back to the Future.
The second one is like, okay, let's sell this as a horror movie. Walk in the theater, and boy, oh boy, Mike, that is not. I love her though.
I know you do. I know.
Oh boy,
you do.
She's awesome. That's real appeal. I like her tremendously.
Did you see the trailer to Hubie Halloween, though, from Netflix, which is Adam Sandler's new Halloween movie that's coming out on Netflix? Boy, he's just – boy, the cash – he checks. Those checks keep coming in.
Why not? It is what it is.
And then you got guys like Kevin James and Maya Rudolph. They're all cashing the checks right behind them. They're in these movies.
Why not?
Hey, listen.
Hey, I want to talk to you about something. This week in TV history, September 8, 1966, Star Trek premiered on NBC.
Right.
Tell us the importance of Star Trek over these years.
I mean, it really produced Comic-Con. We would not have Comic-Con without Star Trek. It produced the mega geek to have an influence.
You know, you brought up a memory because we used to go, the conventions I went to were in New York City. Mm-hmm. It was Star Trek conventions or Fangoria.
Yep.
One or the other. I used to rotate. And I got to tell you, I saw Shatner speak, and a lot of the Star Trek crew, they were there a lot of times in then Fangoria. I have a lot of good memories. The memorabilia dealers. I have so many press kits I used to buy. I have a whole collection.
We saw Toby Hooper. We remember seeing Dick Miller, too. Back in the day. Yeah. But it really spawned. I mean, it's not a very good show, let's face it, but it became a cult classic and an iconic show. And
you know, I was saying to somebody the other day, you had that ran from 66 to 69, right? Then you had Star Trek, the movie.
Yep.
Directed by Robert Wise, who did West Side Story. Movie was not that well received. It was very, almost like 2001, A Space Odyssey with Star Trek. It's very meandering and slow.
Very slow.
All right. Very slow. And then, if it wasn't for Nick Meyer, who did Wrath of Khan in 82, right?
Yep.
We may not be talking about Star Trek the same way.
I think Ricardo Montalban might have saved the series.
Oh, my God. That's completely – I mean, that was so well-received. People were so excited. It was a really good movie, and it gave rebirth to that original crew.
Wow, 66. That many – it was 55 years ago that debuted. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
We're actually going to go back 19 years to September 11th. What was going on in theaters in just a little bit? But let's do a quick fast five here, Chuck. We got some
let's
real
go.
Good names
let's
in
go,
there.
Let's go, Mike.
And I say quick. We got to do quick. All right, here's an easy one for you. We're both huge fans of him. He turns 73 years old this weekend, and that's Sam Neill, believe it or not, who's ready to go with his new Jurassic Park movie. I guess it's Dr. Richard Grant. I mean, that's the one, right?
Alan Grant.
Yeah. Alan Grant, sorry.
Alan Grant, come on. That's a flip you can make. Here's what's interesting for people to know. When they were casting Alan Grant, they looked at a few actors. One was Jeff Daniels as Dr. Alan Grant. He would have been good. And then there was another actor. I'm trying to think.
Not Charlton Heston. That's a bummer.
It was, I'm trying to think who it was.
Well, rack your brain because
In what's his space? The movie.
Jeff Daniels. William Hurt. William Hurt.
William Hurt. Yeah, William Hurt. Okay. Yeah. William Hurt. I don't like him as. I wouldn't have liked him as. He's a good actor, but Sam Neill was Alan Grant.
And if you want to see him outside.
Charming.
Very charming.
It worked. Jeff Daniels would have worked, too.
Very good in Dead Calm, too. Very good in that with Nicole.
And they also talked about Harrison Ford, but he was so familiar with
Steve. He's too big. Yeah, he would have been too big.
Yeah,
Chuck, how about Jacqueline Bisset, one of my first crushes growing up, that white tank top in the deep. 76 years old this weekend. Jacqueline Bisset, I mean, we just think about the tank top.
That poster made her famous, no doubt.
It did.
It's interesting. She's so appealing in Airport, though.
She really is.
She's really appealing. Even though she's like 40 years younger than Dean Martin, it works. No, I think he's 50. She's in her 20s. It still works. It's believable, though.
He's 65. She's 19 in that movie, I think.
It worked. It's all good.
And who can forget?
But Dean Martin in Airport, and I know we're always veering into different. He's so damn likable in that movie.
Even though
he's cheating. Two lead characters. I always said, it's the weirdest screenplay of all time. Two lead characters, Burt Lancaster, Dean Martin, they're cheating on their wife. Not one, but
and they're heroes.
Like, it's weird.
And they're the heroes.
One is okay. The two leads, that's you don't see that often.
Let me tell you something. I watched that recently, maybe about a couple months ago. That movie is great. It's a
fantastic. I like it. I did a revival a few years ago.
Great score.
It's a soap opera.
Yeah.
But it works. When Dean Martin's getting sucked out of that plane and he's holding on, that whole sequence is awesome. Yeah, I like that movie a lot.
Helen Hayes, too. Yeah, it's just great stuff.
Jacqueline Bisset's really appealing in that film.
You don't want to bring up her remarkable turn in When Time Ran Out, or we just want to move on?
Wasn't beyond the Beside Adventure, right? She's not. That's Veronica. That was Veronica Hamill.
Easy to get those two.
Boy, that was a beautiful woman. No,
She was.
I'm serious. I mean, really beautiful, and she was so good in.
Hill Street Blues. We're getting off on a tangent
here. Well, she was good. It's okay.
That was a believable couple, though, because Daniel J. Trevante should be able to get a woman like Veronica Hamill. I mean, he's a very handsome man, that Daniel J. Trevante.
It worked. It was all good.
Unfortunately, Paul Walker's
Those scripts were tight. It worked.
They were great. It was great TV. Paul Walker's no longer with us.
I just wanted to bring up Beyond the Beside Adventure.
I got you. We need to move on.
Thank you.
Paul Walker was not in Beyond the Beside Adventure, unfortunately. But believe it or not, he's been gone 7 years.
Speaking of Paul Walker, Michelle Rodriguez said she confirmed. I don't know. They were joking about how Fast and the Furious, after the next one comes out, the next one will take place in outer space. She said that's going to happen.
God, get the hell out of here.
That's what she said.
All right. Well, let's do
You're going Moonraker here, Mike. They're doing Moonraker. They're going Moonraker. It'll work. Paul, it's so ridiculous. It'll work.
Chuck, Paul Walker. All right, stop. Paul Walker. He would have been 47 years old. Do you have a Paul Walker movie? Because I got one in my hip pocket here that you probably forgot about.
Joyride?
Yeah, it is Joyride.
All right.
Great movie.
Yes, fun.
And he's good. He's good in Pleasantville too.
He did that movie with Jessica Alba that has watchability.
Into the Blue.
Is it a great movie? No. Is it very watchable when it comes on cable? Yeah, it is.
You know what it is? It's a modern day The Deep. That's what that movie was. It's the same thing. Here's a tough one because this guy's been in a million movies. Joe Pantoliano is only 69 years old. This guy's might have been around for 69 years. Joe Pantoliano, what do you think of? Now, you want help or no?
Midnight Run.
Midnight Run's very good. I think of Fratelli, the Goonies.
Oh yeah.
And also he's very good.
He brings the same thing to almost every movie.
He does, and it works in any kind of genre movie. It doesn't matter.
It does.
The Fugitive is one of the cops. He's really good in that too. And you know, his character was supposed to die at the end of that film, and they got the dailies, and he's so likable in it that they tagged on that last scene where he was actually still alive, and he actually came back for the sequel too, U.S. Marshals with Tommy Lee Jones. A little known fact for you there, Chuck. Last but certainly not least, we talk about him a lot, but Brian De Palma is 80 years old this weekend, Chuck. To me, his apex is The Untouchables, but he's done a lot of great stuff.
It's The Untouchables. I was talking about him on a radio spot I did today, and I was giving thought because I remember initially in his career, he always got shoehorned in, oh, he's a Alfred Hitchcock hack. He just copies his camera. And let me tell you something. When you look back at his body of work, it's a damn good body of work.
It is.
I love what he does with his camera. Listen. The stairway sequence with the baby carriage in The Untouchables is incredible, right?
Incredible.
When you look at the
Carlito's scene, Way.
Carlito's Way is very impressive. It's very impressive. Some of the stuff he did in Scarface, very impressive.
The ending to Blowout.
You could argue Blowout 1980 is the best acting work of John Travolta's career because it doesn't feel like a movie star. It feels like an actor, right?
Yep. He feels like a guy on the street. Yep.
That movie is a great movie.
Yep.
He did Carrie. He did a movie called Casualties of War, right? With Sean Penn and Michael J. Fox. Later on in his career, he made a couple clunkers.
I'm a fan of Mission Impossible, too. I know you're not a fan
not.
Of it. I like
okay.
it.
Okay. Having said that, he's a body double. I love body double. He's a damn good director, man. His camera work, he's made – The Untouchables is an immortal classic.
It is.
It's one of the best movies of the 80s. It's a 10 of 10. Sean Connery, revived his career as well. Oh my goodness, he's done some good work.
Well, we talked about it last week with Connery. Yeah, he's just unreal, Chuck. There's no doubt about it. But you know, De Palma hasn't made a movie in forever. So he did make a movie called Domino that nobody went to see last year. It was overseas. So and one of those guys that, you know, guys like Richard Donner, Zemeckis, well, not so much Zemeckis, but these guys like that were making great movies in the 80s. They just can't get work now. You know, they get past their prime and it's sad.
You know what it is. I mean, studios, when you hit a certain age, you're going to be like, yeah, we're going to give this guy $100 million.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Chuck.
But that's a good career. De Palma's, he had a really good career. His imprint is there in the history of movie. I think it is.
Well, Chuck, let's go back 19 years to September 11th. And it was a busy summer season with a lot of big movies that came out. You know, Legally Blonde was that summer. Jurassic Park 3, Planet of the Apes came out that summer as well. Princess Diaries came out. That was a big hit. And in theaters the weekend before September 11th, Jeepers Creepers came out, which was the first one. It was actually opened number one on September, the weekend of August 31st through September 6th. Mm-hmm. The actual weekend right before the planes hit, because remember, it was, I believe, a Monday, right? Or Tuesday.
It was.
It was a Monday morning. Yeah, it was a Monday morning.
Right.
That weekend, these movies were doomed to not make any money. And you had The Musketeer came out. Which was another spin on the Three Musketeers movies. Remember that a movie where Marky Mark played a rock star called Rockstar with Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah, I do remember that.
These movies you might not remember because these movies would be buried because nobody, I mean, the country was just gone, Chuck. Movies were the last thing on our mind. And the movie, an African-American movie called Two Can Play at That Game. All three of those movies, The Musketeer opened up $12 million that weekend, Chuck. It would eventually not gross too much more than that because then the planes hit. And then the following week, a movie called Hardball came out, Chuck. And that's, I mean, the world is depressing enough as it is. Do you need to see a Little League movie where one of the kids dies?
Keanu Reeves, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I remember seeing that in the theater. I saw that in a theater. I saw it in a movie theater.
Well, you saw it right after 9/11.
I did. I guess I did.
It opened to $11 million. It was number one. And coming in second was The Glass House, that Lila Sobieski movie.
What happened to her?
I don't know. She stopped looking like Helen Hunt, and then she stopped getting work, I guess.
Deep impact and that she just disappeared. And she's in Joyride.
And then nothing comes out other than Glitter. The Mariah Carey disaster comes out 2 weeks after September 11th, Chuck. I mean, the movie's not bad enough as it is. Nobody's going to go see it. It debuted at number 11 that week, Chuck. And the movies don't get too much better. The Michael Douglas movie in September 28th. Don't Say a Word with the gal that passed away. What was her name?
I don't even remember it.
That was what was her name? I can't think of it. She was in Clueless. Help me out here. She died.
Brittany Murphy.
Yes. Michael Douglas. It was a thriller. And Zoolander came out.
Okay, that made money.
That made $18 million. They started getting back to the theaters.
Here's the thing about 9/11. Just let's put it in perspective. Easily, psychologically, the worst event of our lifetime on this soil of this country. Having said that, in terms of the West Coast versus East Coast, I think psychologically it did play differently. So movie theaters didn't shut down, other than New York a little, right, in that area. But everywhere else, they stayed open. They did stay open. This was a psychological impact. But there's no doubt people who lived on the West Coast and the Midwest, they took it. Listen, I'm from New York. It was devastating. I just watched before we went on the air here. I just on Facebook, I clicked on and watched a clip with audio of people in the building. It's just,
yeah.
Wow. I mean, like it feels satanic. It's a satanic act. I mean, it's the most god awful, sick, horrible, hard to believe that it could happen, but it happened, event of our lifetime.
It did.
No doubt.
And I remember too, at the time they started editing movies with the Twin Towers in them. I remember distinctly the Spider-Man, the trailer had Spider-Man tying a helicopter to between the two towers. They pulled that from theaters right away. They didn't have that. I remember Vanilla Sky has a big climax at the end that involves the Twin Towers. And a lot of these
Spider-Man 2, right?
Yes, Spider-Man 2 it was. That's right, yeah.
Yes.
Where he ties
In the original trailer, you see it.
Yep, and you know, movies like Armageddon, if you watch Armageddon, an asteroid goes right through the Twin Towers, right through it, Chuck.
Hey, listen, King Kong 76.
Yeah.
Right, the whole climax, it's not the Empire State Building, it's the Twin Towers, these extensive shooting, like, you know, the way they shot it, he's in the elevated jump. I mean, I don't think, if there's one movie in my head where you said, what's the most extensive use of the Twin Towers in any movie, it would have to be King Kong 76, well, no?
That or The Wiz. The Wiz was a big one, too.
Yeah.
Because that's where Oz was. But
question,
yeah.
Did you ever go into the Twin Towers?
Yeah, my dad worked there. I was on top of it a couple times.
I wasn't on top, but I remember a buddy bought a watch at a jewelry store that we went in a few years before. And when those buildings fell, I still say to myself, being in that building, it's like, how could that happen? It's enormous. The scope of those buildings were enormous.
I remember being
stunning. It's still stunning.
It is. I remember that visions of being in the lobby, of being at the restaurant at the top, being outside on. I mean, I was very young. My dad worked there. A lot of the floors weren't done yet, and he was helping lay the electricity in there. I have memories of the World Trade Center 1 right next door too, being in that building.
And Superman flew past.
Right? I mean, there's the iconic imagery. The working girl, the beginning of Working Girl.
Yeah.
It's right there, smack dab.
And also at the end of Daylight with Stallone when he pops out of the water, you see in the background the Trade Center.
Yeah.
It's
iconic, and it's hard to believe it's not there. And you know,
both words are accurate, iconic and hard to believe.
Well, and that leads me to ask the question. I mean, if you're gonna be able to sit down, to me, the movie about 9/11. Now there were a few that came out. The first one that came out were the Twin Towers movies with
World Trade Center.
World Trade Center with Oliver Stone.
I saw that in the theater. My reaction was, this deserves a much bigger scope than what we do, right?
It's too small a movie to too big of an event. Yes.
I agree. Right. I mean, it works on an intimate level if you accept that. But it's not – you needed something – it just needed to be bigger. Will we ever get it? Do we want it? I say I don't want it. We don't need it. I don't want it. Will it happen? Maybe. I don't know.
I think – The hard part is the fact that it happened on screen for most of us. So we watched it. You know, we have already seen the movie because we lived it. So it's hard for us to think there's going to be a movie.
I mean, listen, United 93.
That's the best of them all.
Listen, I saw that. Well, I had some anxiety, I got to be honest, that when I saw that movie. So I'm sitting in a theater. It was the Regal, about a half hour away from Strasbourg, right, in Easton. And it was a packed house. It was opening night. And I got to tell you, my nervous system, I had a hard time getting up. It felt so damn – Paul Greengrass.
Yeah, great
director. It felt so real. I was powerful. And I tell you, I don't think I ever watched that movie again. I didn't need to experience it. It was a really good movie. But boy, oh boy, it felt so real. And it was hard to stomach because the bad guys don't get it at the end.
No, right.
Right. I mean, you know, it's like at least in the Delta, we talked about the Delta Force a little last week, right? It's not real. It's not true, but it's based on a real terrorist takeover of a plane. But those bad guys, Robert Forster, he got it at the end. Chuck Norris kicked ass. Right.
No,
cathartic. There's nothing cathartic about United 93, right?
In fact,
I don't want to watch it again, but it was a great movie.
The very last scene is just you can't leave your seat. It's just you're in shock and amazement on what these people must have gone through.
Yeah.
But it's Doug Paul Greengrass says he does it. No stars so smart.
No, but he made a good movie.
some of the real life people actually playing themselves. It is really a tremendous movie. And, you know, I was a big fan, and a smaller movie, big stars, and it got nominated for Best Picture, but Incredibly Loud and Extremely Close. I like that movie a lot. It's got a real big heart to it. Tom Hanks and Sandra Bullock, although Tom Hanks is...
Was that nominated for Best Picture?
Yeah, that was nominated for Best Picture.
I remember some of the critics are really hard on that movie.
They are hard on that, but it's not fair. It's not fair at all. I mean...
I got to be honest. I've never seen it in its entirety. So I can't judge it.
The young boy who's in it is very good. And it's got an unbelievable, powerful ending with a lot of heart.
Well, his criticism was that it pulls on the heartstrings of something that was too
hard to live through.
Right? Okay.
Now, I didn't see it, but quite recently, with the all-star cast of Charlie Sheen, Gina Gershon, Whoopi Goldberg.
I didn't see it either.
9/11 came out. I think
see it?
I don't even know if it was seen.
That was about 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
But you know, you get financing for a movie like this, and then you cast these
people. That's before streaming really hit big now.
I know.
Probably would find an audience now.
I know, Chuck, but it was an incredible time.
Yeah.
19 years ago.
No doubt. It's hard to believe it's 19 years.
And it is. It really is. It's hard to believe that Hardball was the first movie. I mean, Chuck, when that kid dies in that movie, that movie's stupid. I'm sorry. And they marketed it as a Bad News Bears with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, well, it starts that way, but it doesn't finish.
No, it certainly doesn't finish that way. The most likable. It's like killing Tanner.
You can't do that.
No, you can't kill. Hey, by the way, could they make the Bad News Bears now with some of the language that kid uses in that movie?
Oh, you know, we talked about the remake. The remake with Billy Bob and Greg T. Good cast. It's flat. It doesn't work.
No, and there's no racist overtones at all with these kids. I mean, Tanner is a little bit over the top. If go watch.
And also the psychology between Buttermaker, played by Matthau, and Thornton, it's completely different.
Yep. Totally different.
Billy Bob Thornton didn't read that character right.
No.
It's not Bad Santa.
No, it's bad. He plays it as bad manager.
He's playing like, I ain't a great guy. I got to do this stuff.
Yep.
Where Walter Matthau is just like, he actually ultimately cares.
Yes, yes. And all due respect, and I do like him, but Kinnear's no
Big Mara. And everybody, you also realize how damn good Tatum O'Neal was.
Oh, great
compared
stuff.
To the other girl, not no compare. I mean, I don't want
to
knock.
Remember the other girl.
I got to tell you, Tatum O'Neal, that's a major talent as a child. A major talent.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, let's wrap things up here, Chuck. And we got through another episode. We will do this again next week. Get some rest. Midnight Movie Maniacs. Wrapping things up here. You have a good one, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. Hello to the audience. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Download one of our archived episodes. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.